Welcome to The Art of the Impossible, a podcast for the design and manufacturing industry that explores how you can leverage technology, processes, and people to make the impossible possible. I'm Asif Mogul, Senior Industry Manager at Autodesk, and each week I'll be joined by two experts from the design and manufacturing world to discuss their perspectives on the challenges our industry faces and share what they're doing to overcome them. From smart products, mass customization, digitization, supply chain resilience, and the convergence of once diverse industries, this podcast is for anyone that runs a design and manufacturing business who's interested in making things possible. You can subscribe by following us on Apple, Spotify, or via your favorite platform. So hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Now, in today's episode, we're going to be exploring the promise of data and how it could be used to transform our industry. According to an article from Forbes, which was published in July of last year, to survive in this new digital economy, companies must capitalize on their data growth and deliver new solutions. Now, I think most companies would agree on the strategic importance of data, and I certainly know many who are collecting terabytes of data. Still, mastering data can still be a challenge, especially if you're a small to medium-sized enterprise. What data should you collect? How do you get the right data to the right place? When it's distributed across different teams and locations, might sit on different clouds, different devices, and even different machines. And finally, what can you usefully do with it? And those are just some of the topics I'm hoping we can lift the lid on with my two guests today. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Rob Marchant, who's the CEO of Marchant Kane Design Limited, and Tom Jones, who's a Senior Solution Architect Manager at Amazon Web Services. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Happy to be here.
So Rob, could you just help the audience understand a little bit more about what does Marchant Kane do and what sort of industries do you serve?
Predominantly, we're a design, development and manufacturing company for high-end supercars and hypercars. That's where our business sits. We have other bits and pieces of it, which we develop and produce other types of products, which are non-automotive. So two sectors that we work in, and the majority of them are high-end, high-level products.
Great, thank you. And Tom, I'm sure everyone has heard the term Amazon and is aware of Amazon Web Services. Could you just help us understand what your role inside the company is?
Absolutely. So I am managing a team of solution architects who work with our partners in the manufacturing and automotive space. So companies like ABB, Bosch, Siemens, Autodesk, and so on.
Great to have you both. So let's just kick off. So Rob, perhaps I could start with you. You can't read a blog article or a white paper or anything without the word data being mentioned. Data seems to be literally at the core of every digital transformation discussion we have. And it might sound like a strange question, but why exactly is data so critical?
God, that's a very broad question. To us, it takes many forms. We have data from our customers, which we use to design components and information from that. We have data internally, which is all about how we manufacture stuff and where that manufacturing goes. We have, of course, finance data, where those things sit. And then we have a source of data which is about quality systems and management thereof of quality systems. And all of those things all need to be knitted together. So that it creates barriers and also gateways. So you can't pass through something unless you've done something to achieve that piece of work. And all of that is data. Security is also paramount amongst all of those things, particularly our customer data.
So what I heard you say there, Rob, was that because there's so much data or so much potential data that exists inside a business today, I guess this is before you've even started collecting on is like a IoT kind of data. It's probably critical to bring a lot of that data together to understand it, because that feels like it's one of the most effective strategies a company could employ to kind of drive any kind of transformation or change. Would you say that's about right?
As a small business, we have pockets of information which are not linked together, which unless you're a programmer or some form of complete tech wizard who understands a PLM system and an MRP system and how those two completely different systems can talk to each other, they have to sit in different silos and are manually transferred from one to another unless you pay somebody a vast amount of money. So it becomes a handicap, because the flow of that information and the quality of that information then is then driven by the quality of the person who takes it from one place and puts it into another.
Thanks, Rob. And so Tom, maybe we could come to you. Now, we heard that there's a lot of data that could be gathered already inside an existing business. And I've heard many companies tell me that I'm collecting so much data, I kind of don't know what to do with it. So when it comes to data and your experience of data from, you know, within Amazon, how do you go about separating the useful data from the non-useful data?
Well, a couple of points there. First of all, it may not be necessary. It's cheap to store data today. So, and I heard someone say, data is the new oil. And I think that's true. You don't know how useful that data will be in the future because you're not looking at it today and you're not able to tie those systems together to see the interactions. But over time, those things are becoming easier. The level of sophistication that you need in order to understand how all these systems can be integrated together, or how, even if they're not, how you can collect that data and then build insights across those different silos, that's becoming less of a, you know, it's becoming less of a hurdle over time.
That's a really interesting point you make. And my comment earlier about companies that are kind of getting a little bit stressed about, look, I'm collecting terabytes of data, I'm not necessarily using all of it. What I'm hearing you say is, actually, don't worry about it, because, you know, what does it cost you to store it? And at some point, you could and would and should, and you might want to then leverage that data you've got. So I think what you're saying is, don't worry about it. Keep storing the data. And over time, the way to analyze, connect, and interlink that data will become easier and easier. So that's probably a really useful perspective for a manufacturer to consider.
Yeah. I mean, it really comes down to, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? What's the use case? Are you looking at OEE? You're trying to figure out, well, do I have enough capacity today, or do I need to buy more machines? Do I need a bigger factory? Those are very large capital expenditures. And if you don't have the data on how much efficiency or uptime, you know, production time you have on each one of your individual machines, you can have a bottleneck there. You could be at full utilization, but you know, if you're collecting that on a piece of paper, or your systems are not connected and you don't know where your bottleneck is, then that's the use case that you can focus on and say, all right, I need to understand what's happening with my asset management, or I need to understand what's happening with my material supply and, you know, the flows in the factory. Or maybe it's a focus on safety and, you know, you want to make sure that your workers are safe. Whatever that use case is, then that gives you a lens to start inspecting that data, even if they're in separate silos, to try and build a insight across them.
So again, I think start with the end in mind is what I'm hearing you say. And again, some of the companies I've gone in and sort of spoken to, I think there's this kind of, maybe it's a myth, right? Maybe it's a myth that you need to collect as much data as you can about everything and do something about every single thing kind of overnight. And what you're saying is, do you know what? That I think maybe that was as a way of driving a lot of stress and frustration. Just be very clear about what you want to achieve and just start there. It sounds very similar to some of the conversations we have around sustainability with customers in terms of Don't try and have a revolution. Just pick one thing, get good at it, and then, you know, an agile kind of way, move on. It seems like there's a lot of parallels from your experience to sustainability. So great insights. So Rob, perhaps we could come back to you. Based on what Tom was just saying, start somewhere specific and do something about it. Do you have an example, a practical example that you could share with us on some types of data you gathered and what you ended up doing with it?
A lot of the data we start with is CAD data. So we receive a vast amount of data from an OEM, whether it's a car company or a product developer or whatever it is. And that can be, you know, in good condition or bad condition. The next step within that process is to make sure that it's readable and capable. And there's where the first potential broken link starts. Is here's my original data, here's what I've done with it, and I'm now working on it here. How do I maintain that link? That's the first one. And that's pretty. And where was this stored, and where's this stored? Mm-hmm. So that's the first step. And a PLM system and project lifecycle management system does that relatively well, as long as you do the simple things well, like versioning numbers. Make sure you've got your part numbering system correct and everybody writes the same protocol for every single thing, because otherwise you end up with, I thought it was this data. No, it's not that data, it's this data. So that transfer from one step to another, and then the management thereof. So that's great. And the PLM systems, as long as you've talked to the right people and they're professional and they give you the right stuff, you can end up with pretty powerful bit of kit, which is great. And at the end of it, in various stages along it, you have to give that data out in one way or another to suppliers, to other parts of the business. And they have to understand what it is and at what stage in its life cycle it is, because if it's very early in a development process and we just want a look-see cost base, for instance, how do we extract the bill of materials out of what we're doing and what level each one of those bill of materials and what does it refer to? PLM holds that very well, but when you're trying to put that into an MRP system to then get the next level of information, you've now set a precedent, you've opened a door, and that door is now allowing this data to move to there, fine. How do you manage this now, this piece of data, which is disjointed from the engineering fraternity and is now in the manufacturing fraternity, and for all they care, it's done, dusted, and we're ready to rock and roll. So that management of those two things is critical. And we do a lot of this. The customer at some point along that journey wants to have regular updates of financial situation of, has the price exploded? Has it got cheaper? They've got to report back into their systems as well. So we've got to be pretty clear on what we're doing, when we're doing it, and what level of data it is. And that's a very simple discussion, but two systems, a PLM and an MRP system from two different suppliers, don't talk to each other.
Right. Okay. So again, really interesting insights there, because I guess when a lot of people think about data, I mean, do people necessarily think about solid models being data? But the reality is, of course they are. Of course they're. It's just all it is data. It's just data you can visualize from an engineering point of view, but it's still data. So what I hear that you're doing is bringing that data into your business, and then I think you talked about cleaning it up and looking at the data integrity and then making sure that it could flow through like a PLM to an MRP system. And that's a really nice specific example. And I guess, you know, we'll come to kind of benefits a bit later, but I guess there's probably some upsides of you managing that process inside the business. Okay, great insight. So Tom, maybe sort of coming back to you from you know, your world as a solutions architect, and in the context of like small to medium-sized businesses, what should leaders of those SMEs be thinking about when it comes to their data strategy? What are some of the things that really should be rising to the top of their minds?
Well, I think, one thing that just struck me is, those little problems, like this one-way door, from the PLM system into the manufacturing execution system. That's exacerbated when you move from a small company to a large company. You move from a single operation to multiple operations or a global operation. So that is, there's a level of complexity there. This may be not an issue for a small company, but if they're hoping to grow into a bigger company, that's a challenge that they'll need to address. Even the synchronization of these CAD files, right? The CAD files can be very big, gigabytes.
Yeah.
And if you're doing around the, follow the sun around the world model, you need to be able to synchronize those across, vast distances and keep everybody working on the same thing. That's another challenge. For small businesses, I think, I'm going to go back to what I said before, which is, what's your use case? What's your biggest pain point? Where do you have your biggest blind spot? And really then just try and focus on that. And maybe, I've talked to plenty of companies who are just collecting data from the shop floor on a clipboard. And okay, what's the quality of your data? Are you getting good data from your clipboard? Okay, maybe you can make insights off of that. If not, because humans are really awful at collecting data programmatically, maybe that's an area to start to think about putting in some type of system to do that measurement. And then you can trust the data, and then you can make a decision based on that data.
Thank you, Tom. So kind of let's move on. Rob, coming back to you, as a leader of an SME, what would you say were some of the biggest challenges you've had when it comes to your data strategy? I know you gave us a very specific example, but do you have some like general buckets of challenges you faced? And can you give us a sense of how or what you might have done to overcome them?
One of the very, very first ones is data security. And our customers are 5 years out from launching a vehicle, for instance, and they're giving you all their body surfaces of styling that, if it went into the public domain, would be quite catastrophic to their business. So protection of that data, and the differences you get between customers and how they want that data stored and where they want that data stored is one of the first steps in anything you do. And you have to ask the question of them. You can't just assume that it's the same as the last one. It isn't, and they mature and they change. Some don't care. Some send you stuff on GrabCAD and they're happy with that. And it's like, okay, that's what you wanted to do. That's absolutely fine. But I wouldn't send it through that medium, and I don't really want to send my data back through that medium. Mm. So what's a better way of doing that? And some customers have come along and absolutely categorically will not allow you to store anything on the cloud. And there has to be a very, very strong link across a VPN of some description. So you cannot send it anywhere else. It's just not allowed. So that's the first part of the conundrum from a small business point of view, is asking some questions of the customer. How do you want to store the data if they don't state it? Or mining their terms and conditions to understand what they want, because the guy who gave it to you is a purchasing guy and has no clue other than don't do this. But okay, so what do you want me to do? Don't know, speak to the engineers. Speak to the engineers, they don't know, then you have to go to the IT department. And the bigger the organization, the more complicated all of this gets. So we put a protocol in right at the very beginning, and that question is asked, and it's asked of that point of contact, i.e. purchasing, and the monkey's on his back. You have to go and tell me what you want done. And if you've got a VPN, or if you've got some form of digital link that you want to make, then that's fine. Let's make that digital link and we'll move on. If it's something else, and we store it somewhere else, then we also state then here are the risks, because everything we do is is risk mitigation in one way or another. And therefore, if this is a risk, if we don't tell the customer it's a risk, then we're at fault and we should know better. So we do that. So that's first bit, is trying to understand where, what, how, and then move it forward.
So before you even do business with somebody, even if it's like an inquiry or something like that, you've got to, as a kind of an SME, you've got to have like a range of options that would satisfy your customer's requirements. I don't care. You can have it as an email link. I'll send you a spreadsheet. Don't care where it'll use Google Docs or whatever. Or yep. To the other end of the scale is it's got to be 100% kind of super secure because we're doing a military type contact or an aerospace type contract. Yep. So you've got to be ready with that range of potential offerings to suit what the customer wants. Okay, that sounds pretty challenging. Sorry.
And there's also a cost involved. Because some of these EDI links and what have you that they put in place, they require a specific software that you have to be able to install.
Right.
And it has to also link in with your CAD software. So you need to get somebody to write that piece of software, implement it, and say, yes, you're good to go. So that cost at the beginning of a project, which we may or may not recover, we need to understand as well.
And that cost is all on you.
Correct.
Before you've even sorry, you were gonna go on to a different point. I just spoke over you. My apologies.
No, that's fine. That's it. That cost point of view is really it's a real one that bugs me.
Yeah, I can see why. It sounds like a huge challenge. So, Tom, just hearing what Rob said, what are some of the practical approaches people could take to overcome? Let's just take that specific example. There's so many ways that you could receive and send data. What are some of the practical approaches organizations could take to kind of just make that pain less and maybe kind of reduce the cost impact it has on the business?
Well, first of all, I mean, my job and the team I lead, our job is to help our partners and our customers understand how to do these types of things as secure and performant and efficient as possible. And, I've been working at Amazon with manufacturing companies for the last 9 years. And we've certainly seen a challenge around, I can never put my CAD data in the cloud, shift over time. And we have many of the premier CAD vendors like Autodesk who are, in fact, building and offering ways to securely store and share CAD data or design data using the cloud. So that's number one. Number two is my team then will sit down with customers and talk about, all right, well, here's how you can actually do that. So to help assuage some of those fears or concerns that the company may have. Regarding how to do this easily, there are proprietary offerings from each of the vendors to be able to do this. And, even things, the Autodesk Forge that will allow you to build your own model repository and even do conversions on those models and view it all on a, through your browser. So that's just one example, but there's lots of those out there. And then there's other options. If all you're doing is synchronizing a model between locations, there's tools like Misuni that will allow you to do that block level replication from one place to another. So yeah, it's I started off by saying it's simple, but it can be complicated depending on how massive your operations are.
I guess the other thing, going back to something you said earlier, is it feels like we're always coming back to what's the goal, what's the intent, what's the end you have in mind? And I'm imagining that if you have a specific intent in mind, then certain options will kind of rise to the surface that you could look at, as opposed to it being this big sea of options that you're currently looking at. So maybe that's another thing that would help simplify the process in terms of, like, if you're clear about what outcome you want to achieve, which is so far the biggest thing that you both are saying, it's sticking in my mind, that ought to help the rest of the process.
Yeah. And that's what we do, right? We have a team of subject matter experts that are experts in both the AWS services and building blocks, as well as our partner products, and can, you know, help you architect what's right for your use case. One of the things I like to say, though, is that the perfect architecture is never achievable. Or if it is, it's only for an instant in time, because you're always at the point where you're having to constantly evolve, right?
It looks great on a PowerPoint or in a kind of a seminar, but the reality is it'll never, I hear you, yeah. I think that's another really great reality check to share with people, is that don't expect a perfect architecture. And maybe as engineers, we kind of naturally do that because, you know, we're used to like developing products to operate at high tolerances in a repeatable way consistently for a period of time. And in this world of data, as you said, I like what you said, it's just a snapshot in time. So we have to maybe get our mindset ready for, you know, don't seek perfection, just seek progress. If it's better than what you were doing last quarter, that's a good direction to be in. So.
Yeah, and I think one of the pieces there that's really critical is a focus on agility. You know, you're trying to find out what those insights are, but it's really so that you as a business can be more agile and address your customer demands or needs in a faster way than your competition. And the faster that you can respond and you can adjust and change, the more success you're going to end up with in the end.
And Rob, sorry, you were saying something.
One of the biggest problems is human beings. If you can take them out of that chain in one way or another, then your potential for success is greater. The clipboard on the end of the production line. You know, we run multiple production lines for multiple products. They're similar sort of products, but different customers. And we've taken that out because the guy goes, well, it looks exactly the same as that one over there. So that one did this and I did that there and it didn't work. So what do I do now? Yeah, but read the instructions. Oh, there are instructions. Okay. Remember you told me about those in the very beginning. Whereas now we've got it so that there's a screen in front of him that says, put part A on part B. Measure what happens when you put part A and part B when you press this button. And it gives that information. That information is in stored directly and back into our server. And we can eventually, we will be able to mine that information more and more. And that, like you were saying, Tom, about how to make sure your OEE is good, that's one thing. I'm more interested, to be honest, is the consistency of the component and the PPM level is critical to us. Yeah, we don't make very many components, but they're all for very, very high-end vehicles. And therefore, you know, the customer at the end of the day has a high perception of quality. So if I'm not got a PPM that's down in the tens rather than in the hundreds, then we're going to be in trouble. And that data, being able to explain it back to the customer and say, no, what we did was correct. What you've done, and we don't understand what you've done, something's happened in between. So again, it's that hand over to somebody else. How do you prove that your bit was right in the first instance? And the data is the bit that tells you that immediately.
That's a really great insight, Rob, because my next question was going to be to you to talk about some of the real world impacts of your data strategy. You've just actually highlighted one brilliant example. But so in that specific example, are there any measurable impacts that you could share with us in terms of, you know, what was the result of making that change? As you, I think you were saying, kind of removing the clipboard at the end of the process and sort of.
It's purely consistency. And the guy doesn't write down 2.1 seconds every time he does a measurement, because that's the number that he's got in his head. It's done automatically. All he's got to do is press two buttons, make sure he's not going to chop his fingers off. And the thing moves. And the data is stored. He doesn't have to write it down. And this writing it down and transferring it. So now I've got a clipboard full of data. And now I've got to turn that into a spreadsheet, which somebody's got to write down. So, you know, between an eye, a brain, and a finger, there goes my data. And so minimizing that input and that impact of people. It's a boring job. People don't like doing it. So that's where part of the problem lies. Let's take it away. Let's do those bits for us automatically. We don't have to think about it. The data is not questioned either. Oh, you manipulated the data. No, there's the spreadsheet. There's the data input. Those are exactly the same. So there's nobody in between fudging the numbers by putting 0.02 at the end of it, which makes the data look much better than it did before. So those things that really, you know, provable data sources, making sure your data sources are unquestionable.
Well, this might sound like a slightly strange question, but what's the business impact of that increased level of consistency?
Difficult to measure because you know, a customer's going to say, what's your PPM level? Well, you know, my PPM level, if I look at it directly, is in the millions simply because we make 10 parts. How do you measure that? But if I say, here's 10 parts, and every single one of those parts was in the parameters that were requested by the customer at the time, that's one big, big step in the right direction, because the level of confidence, the ability to give a clarity of what you're doing that day and what the information you got from that day is absolutely paramount.
I get you, yeah. So it sounds like it's very much focused on, it's a measurable, it's something you could demonstrate to a customer to raise their level of confidence and maybe even their experience. And dare I say, it might be a differentiator between a customer choosing to work with you versus choosing to work with someone else who will have a lower level of consistency.
Is correct. Right? Yep. And so, yeah, exactly that. But you can't say they don't do it. They probably do it in their own way, but you know, they're my competitor. So you know, I've probably been in their factory at one point or another, and I know how they do things. But what we do, we have to be categoric on it.
Yeah, I think that's a good example of focusing in on a specific challenge.
Yeah.
Because obviously that's a differentiator for you, Rob, yeah. And it's helping you grow your business.
It's exactly right. I mean, and you know, where was that focus and why was that focus brought forward? It was brought forward simply because we knew we collected the data, but it was down to the quality of the person doing it. If that person leaves, it's like the bloke with the special hammer, you know, he's gone. How do we know the right sound is? When we hit it, we don't. So we had to record it in some way. And the other thing that goes along with those things is making sure the simplicity, the simple things are right. If the MRP system spits out the wrong bill of material into the MRP system at the wrong level, we get the wrong parts on the production line. They don't go together. We get the wrong data at the end of it. So you can trace all the way back through. And that's super critical.
Fantastic bit of insight there. So Tom, maybe sort of coming back to you. When I speak to like a lot of design and manufacturing companies, increasingly more and more of them are saying to us, "Oh yeah, you know, actually we're ready to explore a data strategy for our business, and you know we're 100% behind this." But what's holding us back is that some of our customers are reluctant to be that open and share data with us in the way that, you know, we've been discussing this morning. Are you seeing that still be a concern? Are you seeing that sort of concern sort of start to fade away or shift? What, you know, what's your view from your work at Amazon?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, like I said, when I first started here almost 10 years ago, that was certainly a concern. It's much less of a concern today.
Okay.
We have lots and lots of examples, both in the manufacturing space as well as in other sectors like banking, right? You have a bank account, guess what? There's a good chance it's running in the cloud.
Yeah.
And so yes, I understand your design data is important. So is your money. And that's a pretty good way
it's
to
all
show.
It's all perception,
money.
Isn't it? Yeah. No, that's the problem.
Yeah, this is what I'm wondering, because you know, it's just very similar to, I think, Tom, you said this earlier. There was a time where people would say, there is no way on this earth that I'm going to put any of my sensitive data in the cloud. And yet they'd go off and do some online banking the next day and buy and sell some stocks and shares and kind of stuff. But that perception is thankfully starting to drop now. And I think it seems like a similar case applies. I mean, perhaps customers just need to be challenged a bit more to say, you know, is that really the case? Is that really the case that your customers aren't ready? Or is it still a perception that's hung over from, you know, maybe a number of years ago?
Well, you know, my experience with manufacturing is that a lot of times the people who are running manufacturing companies, they're conservative. They have, you know, small margins. they need to know that whatever, they need to have a guarantee, basically, that whatever they're going to spend capital money on, that they're going to see a return. And that, you know, I'm confident that we now have enough data points and enough examples to be able to show how you can do business using the cloud, do it securely, get your money back, make more money, and get the agility that I was just talking about a minute ago, so that, just like Rob, you're able to differentiate yourself from your competition.
So we're coming to the last chunk of the discussion, and I'm going to put you both on the spot, and sort of in a moment I'm going to ask you to give like a gem of advice or a piece of a golden nugget piece of advice that an SME could hear and sort of implement straight away. So I'm mentioning that now to give you a bit of time to sort of mull over that whilst we carry on the discussion. But Rob, coming back to you, it sounds like you guys are, we bandy this term around inside the industry, like sort of tech maturity. Sounds like you and your organization are quite a long way along your kind of digital journey, and you have a high level of digital matureness and experience inside the business. But for you, without giving away anything obviously commercially sensitive, what's next for you and your digital journey?
I think the next one is really more about visualization of data. I think that to me is one of the nice ones. That's, if you've got the data and you can put it in front of people and go, look, we're going in the right direction. It's up or down or straight along or whatever it is, on a minute by minute or second by second data time is would be absolutely perfect. And that goes right from the concept of design, right the way through to production guys with their SDMC built boards at the end of the production line, showing you the safety, the quality, the delivery, the environment, all the other measurables that we put in as key performance indicators. You know, if all of that was completely visual, and you didn't have to go mining for it, I think that for a small business would be absolutely huge. You know, just a board sitting in my design office that says, here's all my projects, here's what's happening with them. We've got a spot here that's causing us a problem from a design point of view, and this is how we're going to go about it, but it's going to add another six hours, 20 hours, or whatever it is to my budgeted time. You know, those sort of things that we do at the end of the product, but if you had it in real time with some visualization, that would be really, really nice.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be such a powerful tool for anyone in the design to manufacture lifestyle to have that kind of real-time information at the fingertips, because it could inform your decisions, inform your choices of things like manufacturing processes, materials, timeframes.
Suppliers,
yeah. What I'm hearing you mentioned there, Rob, is sort of like the application of some level of intelligent automation to the terabytes of data we probably have and turning it into useful insights. So that sounds like a great question to ask Tom now, actually, from the world that you work in, Tom. What's next from a technological point of view that might help address some of those like really interesting aspirational things that Rob was talking about?
So there's a ton, right? And I don't think we have enough time left to dive into it in detail. But you know, just taking something like what Rob was talking about earlier, quality control. We have a service, it's called Lookout for Vision. It uses cameras to do quality control. And it's very simple to install, configure, uses machine learning to understand, hey, is this part that was just manufactured within tolerances? So, you know, those little building blocks like that can be assembled together to build some of the instrumentation that somebody like Rob would need in order to run their business. And that's what we're really in the business of, is, you know, removing the undifferentiated heavy lifting and allowing every business to be able to focus on what their core value.
So what you're saying is there are lots of the, I like the term you use, building blocks, by the way. So you're saying there's lots of these kind of like potentially accessible building blocks from yourself and other technology providers that are available to sort of do some of the heavy lifting that Rob was talking about.
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm now going to put you both on the spot. So I kind of gave you a little bit of warning a couple of minutes ago. So I want you to imagine that every single leader of every single design and manufacturing company is listening to us. I hope they are, because it'll be doing wonders for our kind of listener levels. And they're hanging on every single word that you're both saying. And they're in their mind, they're sort of asking you the question, what's the one bit of advice? What's the first thing I should do as a leader of a D&M SME to take my data strategy to the next level? So, Rob, could I come to you first?
Jesus, that's a big question.
It's a big question. I should maybe call that the big question section on these podcasts, but it's only just occurred to me now, so it's a bit too late.
I think Tom said it right in the very beginning. Focus on something and make sure you ask the right questions, not about only of yourself, but of the other people around you. So I asked for a part numbering system from my supplier of my PLM, and I got a part numbering system, but it was not what I wanted.
Okay.
So you have to be very, very specific, which I thought I was, but I spent a lot of money getting that point that bolts into my PLM system, and it doesn't do what I want it to do. It certainly doesn't manage the part numbers that are in the way that I wanted it. So it's very difficult to be very specific about something when you don't know what you want at the end of it. So define what you want at the end of it, even if it's a small step, and be absolutely categoric about it.
Yeah, again, we're coming back to that, be clear what the end objective is and use case. So thanks, Rob. And so, Tom, same question to you from you know, where you sit in the technological world. What would be the first thing you would encourage a leader of an SME to do if they want to take their data strategy to the next level?
Well, the first thing I would say is, you know, as a technologist, there's a lot of shiny objects out there. And there's a lot of ways that, you know, you could dive into technology here, there, and, you know, somewhere else and geek out. But and that's cool and that's fine. It may not accomplish your business objective. I do think, you know, some of the big things that we're seeing are around digital twin, digital thread, really trying to collect enough data to have data be the well from which the rest of the design is grown and influenced, and then all the way into things like smart products. You know, what is that entire journey for you? What does that mean? The cool thing is we can capture all that data, and we have systems and building blocks to help you do that easily and efficiently and cost effectively. You can do a lot of experimentation for a low cost. And so, you know, that's probably what I would say. I would say educate yourself and experiment. Experiments don't have to be expensive, unless you're paying a PLM vendor like Rob had to do. But yeah, experiment, because that's going to start to surface some of those insights, hopefully, about what that end goal is and where you really want to be. And then you can work backwards from that point into, all right, what's the appropriate approach? What's the appropriate technology? And maybe I do need to pay that integrator or PLM vendor, but now you have a better understanding of exactly what that is.
Great insight. Okay, so I've got my usual task of trying to summarize everything I've learned from today's conversation. I'm going to give it a go, so you can tell me whether you think I've captured this well enough or if I've missed anything. But in terms of building a data strategy for your business, I think what I heard clearly you say was always start with something specific. Don't try and like eat the elephant all in one. So what's your objective? Do you want to kind of increase your sales? Do you want to drive up your innovation? Do you want to just focus on operational efficiency or even just focus on your product quality? And there might even be specifics within categories like that to focus on. But that seems to be the first thing that we just kept coming back to. start with the end in mind, start with something very specific. The other thing that I heard you both say was, you know what, you've got tons of data inside your business. Look at it, but don't be afraid to collect more. What you were saying, Tom, is that at some point that data will be of use to you. Don't stop collecting data, but maybe you've got a lot of data that could give you some insights in at the moment. And Rob, you were saying something around, well, it's good to have these data, but these data silos, but they do exist in silos. So maybe one of the next steps that manufacturers could look at is just focus on connecting the data silos and creating this concept of a digital thread. Tom, you kind of mentioned that just towards the end, but don't go and chase the madness of perfection. Just make sure it's better than what you were doing and make sure it links back up to the specific end in mind you have. But keep in mind that you need to be agile about it. So once you've solved this problem, it may only solve that problem for that specific time. Be ready for a shift in your data strategy as the world around us changes and technology develops. And then the final point is that, well, there are lots of accessible building blocks out there. So just go out and educate and experiment as long as you keep that end in mind. So I think those are the key takeaways from the conversation I've taken today. Has that captured what we discussed, you know, pretty well?
Yeah, I think so.
I would say, you know, if you're in business, you've written a business plan at some point. That business plan's got a lot of bits and pieces in it. Treat data in exactly the same way as write a data plan.
I love that, Rob. Make data part of your business plan. So what a fascinating conversation. I really want to thank you both. And I hope, as always, that if you're listening to this, you've heard something that Rob and Tom have said has sparked something in you to say, do you know what, I want to find out more. So I would encourage you, as always, to go out there and as Tom said, educate yourselves, but experiment. Don't wait. So thank you to my guest, Tom Jones from Amazon Web Services and Rob Marchant from Marchant Kate Design for your time. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll speak to you all again on the next podcast. Mm-hmm.